Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. During the holidays, our thoughts naturally turn towards family and home. But for some Tulsans and Americans across the country, there's no home to go to. Nationwide, unsheltered homelessness has been ticking up over the past several years, after a number of years of decline. Although getting a handle on exactly how many are homeless is a tricky statistical exercise. But the Department of Housing and Urban Development says roughly just over 500,000 Americans are homeless on any given night. With that uptick, there's been a backlash against homelessness. The Trump administration has talked about a new role for policing. The president himself has complained about the homeless presence devaluing property values. And a number of communities around the country have proposed restrictions on unsheltered homelessness. In Tulsa, the Mental Health Association of Oklahoma is working hard to find housing for homeless Tulsans. Their Housing First initiative, which is nationally hailed, is working to reduce chronic homelessness. They've set a goal to eliminate chronic homelessness at large. But progress is difficult. I'm joined by the CEO of the Mental Health Association of Oklahoma, Michael Brose, to talk about their work in finding permanent shelter for those who have none. The Mental Health Association of Oklahoma has been working hard on persistent homelessness for a number of years, your Housing First initiative. You've set a goal of trying to end chronic and persistent homelessness in Tulsa. How's that work going?
Well, you know, to be completely candid, I think we're all of us that in this work are a little disappointed. While since 2015 till now, we've housed over 1,000 people off the streets and
You have 1,000 units of housing today.
We have about 1,500 units total. Now, that's mixed use, low-income market rate units mixed with people we call program housing, people that are housing units that are tied to various grants that we have that are designated for people who are off the streets, been chronically homeless. So we have a total of about 1,500 units. And now we're in Oklahoma City. We're expanding over there. We have over 150 units that we have access to there.
But you said you were disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers, now again, you know, definitions here. Again, I think sometimes your listeners, I mean, the homeless, and I like to always remind people, they actually have names, but for our purposes, we refer to them as the homeless. But again, they're categorized. So the chronic homeless, and actually that term actually is a definition that comes out of housing, U.S. Housing and Urban Development, out of HUD. That means a person with a disability who's been on the streets at least 1 year continuous or four times in the previous 3 years. And so, man, that's a long road to get into that. And of course, HUD, all over the country insists that communities that receive their funding from HUD, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, other communities are qualify under that. We have to prioritize those people who are most vulnerable, who have been on the streets the longest, the most vulnerable individuals, which sometimes are the hardest people to figure out how to overcome where they're living and how they've been living a long time, getting them to a safe, affordable, decent housing.
Now, your Housing First initiative is about putting a roof over their head first before you try to tackle any of the myriad of other issues that led to them being persistently and chronically homeless.
Yes, and of course, Housing First is what it goes by, and of course, it's been the research has been replicated over and over again. Now it's actually been adopted internationally as the most effective way to end chronic homelessness, which is basically the idea for your listeners is get, you know, it used to be, hey, get straightened up, get on medication, get some new clothes, take a shower, and then if you do all those things, we'll help you get a place to live and help you get a job. Well, people just, they can't do it. And so Housing First is get them into housing first, that's the name, and then wrap services around them, engage them in that kind of way. Of course, that process starts long before they actually move in to that apartment.
Yeah, let's talk about that process before they, I mean, I assume it's about building a relationship with each individual person because, you know, they've developed a routine of being on the streets.
Right.
And as much as that's hard for some people to wrap their head around, we think about when our routines are changed, it puts us off our game. And it's something that's often difficult for any human to accept, whether it's a new job or, you know, a change in housing or a change in location. It's something that causes distress and you know, stress in your system. The same is true for the homeless, I would think.
Yeah, in your description there, which is absolutely accurate, all the complex variables that are there. And that's if somebody is very stable in their psychological well-being. And they've become, you're describing someone who's become very, we all are habituated to our lifestyle. We don't think of it that way. I'm pretty habituated to my lifestyle. All of us are. And people who are on the streets for a long time, they become habituated to that. Again, doesn't mean they like it. And I think that's, I hear people still say, oh, don't they like the freedom? No, they hate it, actually. But then you mix in serious, untreated mental illness, delusions, paranoia. You mix in people self-medicating, becoming addicted, trying to control their symptoms through drugs, alcohol, on the streets, what have you. And that just complicates things further in terms of that homeless outreach component that we're really focused on, which, as you mentioned, we have to build that relationship, trust, what have you. It takes time sometimes to be able to do that. And it's a big task. And again, I always say to people, if it was easy, everybody, it'd be solved. It's a huge problem, a growing problem all over the country. Again, the biggest driver of increasing homelessness all over the country is the lack of affordable housing. And I used to say here in Tulsa, we didn't have gentrification. We have gentrification now.
We do.
And so, you know, and I love development. I love beautiful buildings just as much as the next person. But when a developer buys a piece of property, affordable housing, they tear it down and they put another property on there, it can be a bigger income producer. That affordable housing is gone forever. That is not being developed unless special effort is made to do so.
In some cities where you've seen gentrification going on for a couple decades, you see a total flip, you know, where in previous decades, the affordable housing areas were in the central core of the city. Now, oftentimes, they're in the far, far, far distant fringes, which creates even more issues.
Right. And then, you know, landlords cannot, by the Fair Housing Amendments of 1988, Federal Fair Housing Amendment, they cannot discriminate based on age, religion, gender, disability, religion, but they can discriminate on somebody being unable to pay the rent or if someone has a felony conviction. Well, there's a lot of landlords that are very hesitant to rent to someone who has a felony conviction. Just to remind your listeners, one of the things that we seem to be pretty good at here in Oklahoma, and we've done a good job at, is convicting people of criminal activity and
especially drug-related
crimes, absolutely,
substance abuse-related,
right? And you know, we're talking about now. We're not talking about violent offenders. We're talking about nonviolent offenders, and so those become huge barriers to people. And you know, so we have to work with. It can't just be our housing. We also have to work with landlords. And I find landlords, they're really actually many of them are willing to work with us. But they want two things, and these are totally legitimate. They want their rent paid on time, and then if there's an individual starts to have some issues or problems, they want to know who to call, and they want a quick response to help them. And if you can promise a landlord that's one of the ways we can actually expand the housing stock without having to do we'll and we can't arrest our way out of homelessness. We'll never be able to arrest our way out of it. And I think sometimes people think that we can.
Talk a little bit about that quick response. I know we've put some effort into creating these medical response teams or mental health response teams. Is that working out? Is that helping convince landlords that, hey, if I have a tenant with an episode, I'm going to get this resolved without damage to my property so I can continue to rent that property to that person?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think our partners, of course, we don't do this alone. We're all very interrelated, family and children services, CREOKS, counseling and recovery services, all of the community mental health centers, Department of Mental Health. We all work together with case management, what have you. Mental Health Association of Oklahoma, of course, we have our mobile medical intervention team, which is our PA, physician assistant, and her nurse and her case manager, who are very mobile, providing integrated care. And we say integrated care, mental health care, and physical health care. And we work together, working very closely with, of all things, the fire department. Chief Michael Baker, he's one of my heroes in life. The work that they've, the partnership there, Tulsa Police Department, homeless outreach teams, our homeless outreach team that we have, other homeless outreach teams. We have to all work together. And I really want you to know one of the things that's very exciting is we've just started this. I really give Mayor Bynum a lot of credit on this. Every morning now at 10 a.m. downtown, representatives of the Downtown Police Department, Tulsa Police Department Impact Team, the TCC Police Department, the Public Safety Ambassadors, Downtown Security, and homeless outreach teams. We meet together for 15 minutes to 30 minutes every morning during the week to share information on different individuals. And we want to be sensitive to business owners that are having problems around their businesses.
So it sounds almost like you're looking at individuals and coming up with strategies to maybe to get them to accept housing.
That is exactly right. And housing and services and where we can do. And also, again, being sensitive to business owners. I think sometimes there's the thinking that we're not sensitive and, hey, you know, leave these people alone, what have you. Business owners are trying to make a living. And if they the reality of it, although the threat is very, very minimal. Again, it's exaggerated a lot. It's very, very minimal. But perception is reality for people, and that's true for business owners, customers. We want to be sensitive and work closely with those. We can work with the business owners and at the same time help people get the services and the housing that they need. We're trying to do that.
Earlier, we sort of mentioned housing first, but we really didn't totally explain it. The idea is to get a person who is chronically homeless housing, and then you begin helping them with a circle of services, and that's often embedded within the housing they're at, correct?
That is exactly
right. So tell us a little bit about Housing First,
how it
works.
Yeah, so Housing First, so we build that relationship with people. Then we start and we work off what's called the by name list. Again, as I spoke about earlier about the by name list, and people are rated and ranked by vulnerability on different variables. And then when they're up on the list, then we have a unit ready, and then we start to encourage them to move into that unit. And then as we're doing that, that relationship with the treatment community has already started and then continues when they're in the housing with surrounding. Now we know where somebody is located. And that individual, again, I always say Maslow, his need hierarchy, he was right. Now they're not thinking about, where am I sleeping tonight? Where's my next meal coming from? Can I be safe tonight on the streets? Now they're able to think about something different. What's that different thing? They're thinking about their mental health care, their physical health care, their sobriety. And then what's cool about it, when they start feeling better, they want to be employed. And, of course, now we have employment first, and we're really getting people jobs and what have you in all kinds of different ways. And, oh, it's terribly exciting to watch somebody who's been on the streets chronically homeless, and now they're in housing, now they're feeling better, now they're employed. We see it all the time, and it's very spiritual, actually.
You have all these units, and you see all these success stories, but when you turn around, as you're driving on the freeway, you'll see a little encampment of trees and you'll see a tent there. Or you'll look up under an underpass and you see that a person is living under that abutment. You don't have to look hard to find the chronic homelessness. How are we doing on actually attacking that overall goal? Are we making progress, or is it sort of at a standstill? What would you say?
I'd say right now we're treading water. We're holding our own, but there are drivers. Again, I mentioned earlier about the people, once they lose their housing, the barriers to them getting back into housing are enormous. Tulsa is ranked per capita 11th on rate of evictions in the country. Oklahoma City is ranked 13th per capita on evictions. So once people are out of there.
And that's not a good, number one is being bad.
That is not worst. That is a bad statistic. And we have to really, and there are efforts to try to mitigate that now, and we got a long ways to go on that. But again, so the lack of affordable housing, and not enough. We have a lot, but we need more, and we're studied. People travel here. I just entertained a big group out of Oklahoma City yesterday, and they want to know how to do it better there. We're working closely. We're very integrated with them. But also, again, people who are released from incarceration, we've got to do better and move the concept from release to discharge planning to help them really prepare so people have, as they come out of incarcerated settings, into safe, affordable, decent housing, and then have a chance for employment.
Let's talk a little bit about discharge planning. My guest today is Michael Brose, the Chief Empowerment Officer of the Mental Health Association of Oklahoma. So we're talking about helping the homeless find homes today on Studio Tulsa. We had the largest one-day release in the history of the Department of Corrections here this fall. As far as the discharge planning, how much discharge planning went into that?
You know, not enough.
But I'm sure not enough.
But I think on the commutation group, I think there was more. I think because there was so much focus on it, I know that as that was all being contemplated, one of the things that officials came to us and said, can you help? And they went to a lot of different agencies and said, can you help? Can you be available to these individuals? What have you? And so there's a lot more. But I think it's important for your listeners to know there's many other people who are being released who weren't a part of the commutation.
Right.
They're being released for good behavior, on parole.
It's all part of the overall effort to get the numbers down.
That's right.
Within the correctional system.
That's exactly right. And so we've got to work and partner more. We've got to, the Department of Corrections, they need more resources on that end. We need to move it to that end where we're really looking at, and we need to do a better job. I call it linkage, warm handoffs, what have you. And so we're not just giving people $50 and a bus ticket. Where you want to go? Well, I want to go to Oklahoma City. I want to go to Tulsa. Or, somewhere else, and they get there, they have nothing. And so that's a huge driver in increasing our numbers. And again, we're talking about nonviolent offenders here. We're not talking about violent individuals. I think listeners, very important they understand that.
You mentioned the commutation plan, that there was some planning. So this didn't instantly swell homeless ranks necessarily.
No, not at all, no.
Saying that the average person who is released with $50 and a bus ticket, you know, they're very much at risk.
They're very much at risk, and all the time, you don't have anything. And sometimes they have families. There's a lot of faith-based organizations that are really doing fantastic work on helping people transition out of incarceration back into the fabric of the community. But a lot of individuals, for different reasons, are not connected to their families for different reasons. And then sometimes there's just not enough of those type of warm handoff services that are available. And so those are huge drivers. But again, and then when people get out and they do that and they don't have a job, they can't get a job, what have you, well, they're at great risk to turn back to other ways to make an income. And sometimes those are illegal. So we've got to do a bit. We're really going to address this. We've got to attack it on lots of different fronts. And it takes a huge amount of political leadership at the very top to do that.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you have about 1,500 units of housing here in Tulsa. Is that adequate for the population we have today?
Well, again, our model is mixed use, which means that you or I, Rich, could rent one of our apartments if we chose to do that. And then it's mixed with other people who would be off the streets, homeless, what have you. So it's mm-hmm. mixed use. So we like to say the market rate is actually helping prevent people from becoming homeless because they can find affordable housing and not be priced out of the market. But other people, then they're coming in. So it's mixed use. So the idea behind the mixed use model is to reduce any kind of stigma. So you don't like, see those people over there? They used to be homeless.
Yeah, that building over there.
Exactly.
That neighborhood.
That's right. So, your listeners drive by our apartments every single day. And they don't think a thing about it because it's just an apartment building. It's people going about their lives, what have you. And again, and I got to put a plug in is, most of these people do not have automobiles. This is an automobile designed economy, and it's a huge problem. I know we're all trying to work on it. Oklahoma City's working on it. We're working on it. But again, just imagine just that you don't have, you're such a disadvantage if you don't have an automobile in the way we're designed in our economy.
Right now we're working on bus rapid transit, but I noticed that all of a sudden there's requests for redevelopment along the bus rapid transit lines,
right.
Which, what is that going to do? It's going to price the working poor who absolutely rely on that public transportation, perhaps out of that neighborhood.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a function of every automobile-centric city that's put in subways or trolley lines or bus rapid transit. I mean, redevelopment follows these transit stations.
Yeah, that catch-22. And, again, one of the reasons why we own our properties is because we can then preserve affordable housing. It's so fascinating. I'm going to go out in March to consult in Bakersfield, California, about housing and development of affordable housing. I'm going to then drive over to Orange County, California, again, invited to go to consult with them in terms of how to use more private money to combine and leverage with the public money to develop more affordable housing. And so, again, it's so interesting. It's so gratifying that people are looking from all over the country to look to Tulsa, and now Oklahoma City with the passage of MAPS 4. And again, with MAPS 4, with that public transportation, they're going to develop over there what they call microtransit, where they'll have vans stationed in different places. People can have an app on their phone, and they can call for a ride. It costs a little bit more, but there's a much more flexibility in terms of routes and where they can go. Those are the kind of really creative solutions that have got to be implemented if we're going to really make a make a difference here.
Sounds like a public Lyft.
I know, Uber. That's exactly what it is. And I kept wondering, who said we had to have great big buses on fixed routes? Yeah. While we need those, why couldn't there be more flexibility for that, for people getting to and from their jobs and what have you? And Oklahoma City, microtransit.
I want to bring up a point. I know you want to make this too, is that when we talk about Tulsa as a leader in how it attacks homelessness, there's also a perception that because we have these awesome services, the homeless are flocking to Tulsa. How would you respond?
I tell you, that is an incredible, I think it's an urban myth. It's told over and over again. Law enforcement is not just here, but all over the country. I talk to people all over the country. Law enforcement, we love our law enforcement partners, but they are very much echo chamber telling this over and over again. And I've had for the last 10 years a standing challenge. Bring me the name of the city, the organization that sent them here, and I will personally call, and they don't want to talk to me on the other way into the phone. In our business, that is so uncool, it would have you. And I always tell the stories over in Springfield, California.
Now, you're talking about the allegations that cities are busing homeless people to another city.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. I had actually a business owner here in town the other day at a meeting, and he said, well, I got the answer for you. We need to get a bus and load these people up on a bus and ship them over to Oklahoma City. I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? And that's just not helpful at all.
I wanted to also bring up one of the things you've been seeing this fall is sort of a backlash against homeless, the homeless and homeless services. In the last few years have been prohibitions against camping in public, sleeping in public, even sitting or lying down in certain places in the public if it's a place where the city ordinance makers think that that's a place where the homeless might congregate. Sleeping in vehicles, prohibitions have gone up like over 100%. What's your thoughts on this backlash?
Well, you know, it's our human nature. We want to blame somebody or something for problems. And the homeless individuals, people are easy targets. Service providers like us and our partners, we're easy targets. We understand that. But at the same time, it's really about collaboratively from all walks of life coming up with solutions and support. You know, it's just something we have to live with, address, talk to people, meet with people, visit with them. Again, that's why I give housing tours all the time. I tell people, come out and let me show you around. I'll drive you around personally and show you what we're doing and how it works and what have you. And I find over and over again, it really is a game changer for people. Like, because then they can't live within the narrative of sort of a stereotype or a fixed kind of idea about what's going on. It sort of expands their thinking like, oh, I get it. All right. Now that makes a lot more sense to me. And they can see actually all the things that we're doing to address the problem. And I would say it's not us or them. It's just us. And it's so expensive to leave people out on the streets and homeless. We've got to really invest both public and private money in the development of a more affordable housing. And Mayor Bynum, his administration, they are on it. And Mayor Holt in Oklahoma City, they are on it. And that's very, very gratifying to us. And it's a long play, but it's the ultimate lasting effective play.
Everything you've talked about, these are all, as you mentioned, long play solutions. When it comes to politics, long play is never a winning combination. It's always about a short-term fix.
Right, short-term fix.
Do you see any elements of wanting to have a short-term fix, or do you really see a commitment towards long-term strategies?
Well, I think the short-term is really doing what I'm doing right now and with others, meeting with people, talking to people, taking them out, showing them what we're doing, educating them, helping them to understand, and inviting them to participate. So moving them from complainers to participants. Participants out might be writing a check in support of the work, or it may be volunteering or getting involved in some other sort of way. Those are the short plays. The long plays are, it takes time to develop affordable housing. Land location, securing that property, funding that, what have you. It's a slow play, and it takes a lot of public and private investment to be able to do that. But right now, our large policies on that, in my opinion, are inadequate at the very high levels of federal and state government. And again, the MAPS 4, just recently passed in Oklahoma City, will provide 500 new units of affordable housing for this population and renovate over 1,000 units of existing Oklahoma City Housing Authority units, and then also doing all kinds of things to divert people out of incarcerated settings into the fabric of the community in different ways. And, you know, that Oklahoma City Maps 4 is going to be studied by cities all over the country, looking at how a community can come together and really find solutions. But so both cities are doing it a little differently, but there's a lot of crossover.
When we talked about backlash against the homeless, two of the big things is about criminalizing being homeless.
Right.
How are our cities doing at avoiding criminalizing being homeless today? Are we sort of in the middle of the pack? Are there things that we could change pretty quickly that would help in that regard?
Overall, I think we're doing pretty good. I think we can always do better. It takes a lot of political courage by our elected officials to, you know, to resist that pressure from certain individuals or groups or what have you about trying to arrest our way out of it. You know, like, what are you going to do? Lock people up for how long? And what charges are you going to make? What have you? And they're going to be back out on the streets over and over again. And so we're basically not. I mean, we know of people who have been on the streets for a long time. We have seen, there are not that many, but a few instances where people actually try to get locked up because they can be a shower every day, three meals, and be out of the weather, and because that's a solution for them. And that's just not going to work. That's not what's going to help us. We've got to focus in on the development of affordable housing. Everybody, again, there's different definitions about what that is. You know, our range is from zero if they have no income, vouchers, we accept vouchers, and there are not enough housing vouchers. We need a lot more of those. It takes funding to do that. You know, $300 a month and up. And we also have a new program. We're working with people called Adopt a Home, where individuals or groups, people can actually adopt an apartment, pay the rent for the first 6 months and the services to help that individual. And after the end of 6 months, they're free of that obligation. But during that time, we'll be working on that individual to help them establish an income source. So your listeners can know, hey, if they're interested in participating in Adopt a Home, it's a small growing program. We're learning about it, how it works every day. But we're excited to give people a chance they want to participate. They want to solve problems. And a lot of people have a deep compassion for the homeless. Handing money out of car windows, we don't encourage that. Of course, we have a better way where we're picking up people panhandling. You know, like over 1,000 people have now participated in that. Over 400 individuals have gotten different services. 31 people since we started the program have got housing. And then well over 100 have got actually permanent employment. And I talked to a guy yesterday. I was over to our drop-in center, and he'd showed up. He had been out on the Better Way group, and he said, hey, I wanted to meet with Rob or Lisa because I want to get a job and I want to get some housing. And I was on the phone, getting them linked up. We want to do that. That's what people on the street want. They want a place to live, and they want a job, and they want to feel better. And that's what we've got to do to figure out how to do that.
Michael Brose, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Michael Brose is the Chief Empowerment Officer of the Mental Health Association of Oklahoma. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.